All across America and around the world, this is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
And now, your host for today's program, Dale Thronberry.
Hey, and welcome to Veterans Radio. My name is Dale Thronberry, and we're really excited to have you here today. We're going to be talking about a number of different things. It is our benefits program, and we've got kind of a mishmash of little stories that we're going to be talking about. We're going to be starting off talking about a fundraiser here on our local area. Then we're going to be talking about some VA healthcare issues that are going on out there. And then we're going to be bringing on our experts on the benefits side, the veterans healthcare programs out there. So stick around, make sure that you pay attention. And we've got a lot of things going, as I said, mentioning for you today to talk about. And before we can get started with the actual program, we have to thank our sponsors, because without our sponsors, we wouldn't even be here. So we wanted to make sure that we thank Legal Help for Veterans. Legal Help for Veterans specializes in veterans' disability claims. Give Legal Help a call at 800-693-4800 or go to their website, legalhelpforveterans.com. The National Veterans Business Development Council, better known as NVBDC, is the nation's leading third-party authority for certification of veteran-owned businesses. For more information, go to their website, nvbdc.org, or give them a call at 888-237-8433. PuroClean, known as the paramedics of property damage, each PuroClean office is independently owned and operated. In fact, PuroClean is one of the nation's leading restoration franchises, and veterans get 25% off franchise fee. For more information, go to puroclean.com. The Charles S. Kettles VA Medical Center in Ann Arbor, Michigan. For more information for them, go to va.gov/Ann Arbor Healthcare. And finally, the Irwin Prescorn American Legion Post 46 and the Vietnam Veterans of America, the Charles S. Kettles Chapter 310, both of Ann Arbor, Michigan. Hey, if you'd like to support Veterans Radio, here's your chance. Please go to our website, veteransradio.org, and click on the donate button. Just a reminder that Veterans Radio is produced by Veterans Radio America, a 501c3 nonprofit corporation. So your donations would be tax deductible. Yay, right? All right. So thank you very much for your support. Moving right along. All right. There's an event coming up locally this coming Thursday, and it's all about a local resident. His name is Bob Arvin, and Bob was a West Point graduate, went to Vietnam, earned a Silver Star, and unfortunately was killed over there. So we're doing a fundraiser this week, and I've got two people from the organization. Let me make sure I get this right. Number one is Rebecca Uford. She is the past president of the West Point Parents Club of Michigan. And there was a documentary made about Bob Arvin's called Where the Brave Dare to Tread. And the producer is joining us also, and that's Brian Kruger. So, Rebecca, I'm going to start off with you. Welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thank you. Thank you very much for the invitation to be here.
Okay, so tell me what's coming up.
Yes, on Thursday, Thursday at 6 o'clock, we have a reception and then a screening of the documentary that Brian's going to get to tell you about Bob Arvin, who was an Ypsilanti hometown hero, grew up in Ypsilanti and valedictorian of his high school class, and headed off to West Point, where he had a very distinguished career. Earned a lot of awards while he was there, including being the first captain, which is sort of the highest ranking cadet at West Point. And he graduated in 1965 and had a very distinguished career, albeit short, in the United States Army. And in the short amount of time that he served, he made such an impression that West Point has built and named its Cadet Physical Development Center, which is the largest building on post, 500,000 square feet. It's named after Bob Arvin. So this guy is a real hero to our nation, as well as here in Michigan. And this is the anniversary, 60th anniversary of his graduation from West Point. And although I never knew Bob Arvin, it has been my honor to get to know some of his remarkable classmates from West Point, and I just wanted to do what we could at the West Point Parent Club of Michigan to, make sure this story is told again for another generation.
Well, it's an amazing story, and the documentary was made by Brian Krueger. Brian, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thanks, Dale. Thanks for having me on the show.
Thank you for being here. This guy is really was a really unique young man. In addition to being, a local hometown boy makes good kind of story, even as a result of his dying, the legacy has continued on, and that's where you come in. Because can you tell me a little bit about what you know of Bob and also your documentary?
Yeah, so I also grew up in Ypsilanti and lived in Ypsilanti up until 1977 when my family moved to Chelsea. So I was went to the same high school as Bob, and 10 years later, after coming back from Chelsea, going to Eastern Michigan and becoming a teacher, I taught at Ypsilanti High School as well. So I have that in common with Bob. And over the years, when I started my company in Buddy Morehouse and I, my writer, we started to make documentaries. We were approached by Kirk Prophet and Roy Wilbanks and some others who, and Roy Wilbanks knew and wrestled with Bob Arvin at Ypsilanti High School, and Tino Lambros and some of Bob's friends. And they approached me. They were part of the Bob Arvin Foundation, which for years had raised money for Bob Arvin, for the Bob Arvin Foundation to give scholarship money to deserving high school students in the area. And it was really successful. Over 100 kids received scholarship money in Bob's honor. Anyway, Kurt approached me and Roy Wilbanks, Tino Lambros said, "Hey, you've been making a lot of documentaries, some about Ypsilanti and a lot about Michigan. Why don't you make something about Bob?" And at the time, I was involved in a film about Art Daris, Pinky Daris, out in Hamtramck. And I thought, well, let me revisit this when I'm done with this. And I revisited it, and I almost didn't start it until I started thinking about the fact that you start losing these guys over the years. And these guys are starting to get on in age a little bit. And I started to look more and more into Bob's story. And if you peel back the onion in Ipsy, it doesn't take too many layers to find Bob's story. So I started in on that project. And I'm so glad I did, because it was about, I think it was 2015, I started on the project. And when you make a documentary like this, you get really involved in the community and the people of whoever the subject is you're doing the movie on. And it has been an absolute honor to be involved with the people from West Point, starting with Walter Orline, who's been a huge part of making all of this go forward. So we made this film, and I made it. It's the most unique movie I've ever made. It's a lot of the documentaries I made, and I've had them on PBS before and on Major League Baseball Network. This one was a little different. I crafted this film for two audiences specifically. The one audience was for all of my friends in Ypsilanti and all of Bob's friends in Ypsilanti who knew him as the class president, the nicest guy in class, the head of the debate team, in drama club, quarterback of the football team, all around kid, and valedictorian. They knew that story and they knew that Bob. And then he went off to West Point. And the guys in Ypsilanti didn't really know much about Bob and West Point and Vietnam until, unfortunately, he was killed in 1967. So I made it for the group of Ypsilanti people to know Bob, to know who, or to appreciate Bob. But I also made it for the West Point guys. So when Bob gets to West Point, they knew that he came from this goofy town that some of them couldn't pronounce. So he says, "What's Ypsilanti?" So I sort of made it for the West Point guys to understand Bob's Ypsilanti years, and I made it for the Ypsilanti crowd to understand his West Point years, and it's worked really well on that level. However, we started showing it around to high schools and to some communities outside of Ypsilanti, and the story resonated. So when the movie came out, we donated a DVD to every library in the state of Michigan, to every public library in the state of Michigan, through generous foundations that were all spearheaded by Walter Orline. But over the years, and really in the past, unfortunately, 5 years or so, I always audit where my movies end up. The libraries had either lost the DVDs or they had been destroyed. It just DVDs, you know, they kind of, you know, they can disappear, they can be wrecked and all. So I'm going back through to all 397 library organizations, and there's over 600 libraries, but there, a lot of them are parts of organizations. And I want to go through and make it available for streaming to all libraries in perpetuity. So this will be something that won't go bad, and they can always use it. And whoever goes into whatever library in the state of Michigan, they too can learn the story of Captain C. Robert Arvin, Captain Bob Arvin. So that's what this fundraiser is for on Thursday, is to try to create awareness for folks who want to donate to that, to get this film in all of the public libraries in the state of Michigan. And it's not just the streaming of the film, but it's also ancillary products from the film, telegrams, images, letters that didn't make the film cut, but are also part of that package. And it's really just to try to get Bob Arvin's name always solidified in the minds and the hearts of people of not only Ypsilanti, but the state of Michigan. And unfortunately, I think if I stopped 100 people in Ypsilanti right now and asked them who Bob Arvin was, maybe if I got 5 people to know who he was, that I would be amazed. And I want to change that. So that's what this is about.
Well, that's a great, worthwhile thing. And then, you know, for those of us that live in the area, there was a VFW over there. It was a Bob Arvin VFW, but unfortunately, like many other veterans organizations, we're starting to lose our members really rapidly, and it was forced to close. But the film itself is beautiful.
Thank
Brian,
you.
I just want to make sure that I got that out. He uses drones like you wouldn't believe. These things are so cool. I mean, wherever you are in the country, this is the point I'm trying to make here, is that Bob Arvin is the classic, you know, kid from high school that's successful and, you know, is the valedictorian, the coach, the quarterback, all these other things, goes off to West Point, does exactly the same thing. He's the head guy of his class. Now he's got a building named, you get a building named after you at West Point. That means you did something really special.
Yeah, when all the other buildings are named after guys like Pershing and Eisenhower and Grant and things like that, and then you've got the Arvin building, which is the largest building on campus, that turns your head a bit, and that makes you say, who was this guy? And that's why I think it's important for people of Ypsilanti to know that as well. But you're right. I got to tell you though, as astonished I was about Bob, and everywhere I turned, and his you know, those guys would be about 80 years old now. And like a lot of West Point grads over the years, they end up being captains of industry, you know. So I found a lot of them in Fortune 500 companies in the C-suites and all. And to a man and a woman, they would say that had Bob lived, they are just completely convinced that he would have been president of the United States. He was that guy. He had he not only drew the respect of everyone, but he respected everyone. And that's sometimes a really, really hard combination to get. But I'll tell you one more thing. As astonished as I was with Bob, when I got to West Point and I got to meet all the cadet, not all the cats, but cadets, but a lot of the cadets at West Point, my wife and I were honored to be able to watch some of the parades. We sat in the superintendent's suite and watched it in the morning and watched all these cadets. When I met all of the cadets that I met, they're like Bob. So, you know, while Bob was very, very exceptional, the cadets at West Point are amazingly exceptional. And if you don't walk out of there more patriotic than when you walked in, there's something wrong with you.
Well, that's the point. So now we want everybody to walk into the theater on Thursday night, which is the 8th. And where is it going to be, Rebecca? Where is this being held?
At the Canton Imagine Theater on Ford Road. Yeah, it's easy to find. Imagine E with, imagine with an E, Imagine Theater. Yeah, and I want to say that Arvin's inspiration, I got connected to this also through Walter Orline a couple of years ago. I was working an event, and Walter stepped in and was ex very, very supportive there. And really, it was through getting to know some of Bob Arvin's remarkable classmates that I've been motivated to, try to get this going. But one thing that has never been seen before that we're going to show at the very end of this is the connection to the long gray line. If you have any experience with West Point, you know that once a cadet graduates, they enter the long gray line. So I have a son who graduated in 2022. He's now a member of the long gray line. And the current Michigan cadets have a message for everyone that will be attending on Thursday. So I think it's just a great sort of connection and shows really that Bob Arvin's spirit is still still with us today and inspiring. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I think that was, we couldn't promote it any more than that. So we encourage people from all over Southeast Michigan, Northern Ohio, wherever you are, to come on over to Canton, Michigan, to the Imagine Theater at 6 o'clock on Thursday, the 8th of May, to see the documentary called Where the Brave Dare to Tread, the Bob Arvin story. And I want to thank you both very much for coming. And maybe I'll see you there Thursday night.
Thank you, Dale. You. And also, if I could mention one more thing, if you can't make the film or the screening, but you'd like to donate to this cause, you can go to bobarvin.com or bobarvin.org. It's a website, and you can learn all about Bob there. The images, the story, when he was at Vietnam, before he was at Vietnam. It's an interesting website, and you can also donate to the cause. There's a donate to libraries button on every page. Just scroll down and you'll find it, and you can make a donation to this cause as well, and that's bobarvin.org.
Okay. Thank you both very much.
You bet.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Let's see. All right. We're going to take a real quick break right now and play our Medal of Honor segment. And then when we come back, we are going to be talking with Russell Lemieux, or Suzanne Gordon, and they're going to be talking about what's going on between the VA and private health care. So that's our message next. So stick around. You're listening to Veterans Radio.
The Medal of Honor is the highest award for valor in combat given a member of the Armed Forces of the United States. There have been over 3,400 recipients of the nation's highest award. This is one of them.
Chaplain Joseph O'Callaghan administered to the wounded and dying, led firefighting crews, and directed the jettisoning of live ammunition from his stricken ship. Details after this.
If you have a VA claim denied by the Board of Veterans' Appeals, contact Legal Help for Veterans at 1-800-693-4800. They're experts in handling cases before the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Their number again, 1-800-693-4800.
Why do I serve in the U.S. Navy?
For freedom.
Freedom of religion.
What America stands for.
Why do I serve in the U.S. Navy? For honor.
Everybody. And watch out for everybody.
Freedom to vote.
Democracy.
Freedom to go outside and play with my kids.
I joined the Navy to serve my country.
Every freedom that we have.
The right to raise our kids in peace.
My little brother.
My wife. My kids.
Our children's children.
The United States Navy.
It's not for ourselves alone that we serve.
O'Callaghan was serving as chaplain on board the USS Franklin when that vessel was fiercely attacked by enemy Japanese aircraft. Calmly braving the barriers of fire and twisted metal to aid his men and his ship, O'Callaghan groped his way through smoke-filled quarters to the open flight deck and into the midst of violently exploding bombs, shells, rockets, and other armament. With the ship rocked by incessant explosions, with debris and fragments raining down and fires raging in ever-increasing fury, he ministered to the wounded and dying, comforting and encouraging men of all faiths. He organized and led firefighting crews into the blazing inferno on the flight deck. He directed the jettisoning of live ammunition and the flooding of the magazine. He manned a hose to cool hot armed bombs rolling dangerously on the listing deck, continuing his efforts despite searing, suffocating smoke which forced men to fall back gasping. O'Callaghan inspired the officers and men of the Franklin to fight heroically and with profound faith in the face of almost certain death and to return their stricken ship to port. The Medal of Honor series is a production of Veterans Radio.
Military veterans touch everyone's life. I'm guessing right now you're thinking of a veteran, a close friend, relative. Maybe it's you. Even the toughest of us sometimes need help, but don't know where to turn for support. You don't need special training to help a veteran in your life. We can all help someone going through a difficult time. Learn how you can be there for veterans. Visit veteranscrisisline.net. Veteranscrisisline.net. A message from the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs.
And we're back here on Veterans Radio. I don't know where all of you get your information about what's going on in the military or what's going on in the VA, but I get this feed every day, it seems like, from an organization called military.com. And there was an article in there this last week that was talking about some of the problems that the VA is having, of course, with what's going on out there, because, you know, people don't really know exactly what is going to happen with the VA in the near future. But anyway, the issue was with the community health plan, where they were the director of the VA wants to, I don't know what you want to call it, shift more of the care for veterans into private networks. And so we brought two people on that wrote an article about this, and they are from the Veterans Healthcare Policy Institute, which is a nonpartisan think tank. We've got Suzanne Gordon, who is a senior policy analyst, and Russell. Can you pronounce your last name, Russell?
Happy to. It's Lemley.
Lemley. Okay. Russell Lemley. He's also a senior policy analyst. I want to welcome you both to the program, Suzanne and Russell.
Well, we're delighted to be here. Thanks so much for the invite.
Okay. So, Suzanne, I wanted to ask you about the article, about what you feel like is happening at the VA now with their possible shift in care.
Well, I'm gonna bat that over to Russell, and then I'll talk afterwards, because I think he has led this project on looking at the argument that the VA Secretary Doug Collins is starting to make, that the Veterans Community Care Program that was started by the VA Mission Act to outsource care to the private sector is now more cost effective and often he would say maybe even quality effective than the VA. And I sort of think Russell should begin the conversation on the, I'll be glad to chime in. Even though my name is easier to pronounce.
Yes, it is. Thank you. All right, Russell, let me just tell the audience a little bit over.
Yeah, I think there's a couple ways to kind of dive into your question, because one has to do with how to attempt to create what are quote-unquote more efficiencies at the VA. There's a plan underway to cut 80,000 positions from the entire department, and we can assume tens of thousands of those in the Veterans Health Administration. The exact number of those hasn't been revealed yet, but 80,000 positions overall. So part of it is we can think what happens to care that's delivered after those cuts happen, and that's part of your question. And then there's other ways of thinking about this, the same issue, which is kind of the deliberate attempt to shift more of healthcare out of the VA and into the private sector, which is even independent of whether or not there is 80,000 positions cut or not, because Suzanne and I have been documenting this actually for going on 9 years, where we've seen a 15 to 20% increase in the private sector budget of handling kind of healthcare for veterans. And that increase has continued unabated, really, for many years. So this is just continuing a trend that's already been well underway.
Well, the issue, I guess, that I got from your article in military.com was that the Community Access Act is, you know, it's not a bad idea. It's for the veterans who cannot get to their local VA hospital, you know, all the time, because, you know, there aren't hundreds and hundreds of VA hospitals out there. But the thing that it looks like, what you're pointing out, is that it actually is going to cost more.
Right.
If they go to private physicians.
Yeah, I totally agree with both parts of what you're saying. So we start acknowledging that community care is a necessary supplement to what the VA offers. What many people don't realize is that's been true for almost the entire history of the VA. It used to be called fee basis before 2014, and it morphed into being called choice and then into what it's called now in terms of community care. So there's always been that option for veterans that live too far away or it would a service that they need is not available, either at all or in a very timely way. What's happened instead is that something in terms of the outsourcing and referral to the community, which is necessary, is beginning to increase at such a rapid rate is that it essentially threatens the future of the VA as it now exists. And your second point, which is that it's been well documented that the quality of care that's offered in the VA is as good or better than what's offered in the community for the vast majority of conditions in which veterans are referred. If we look at the serious outcomes around 30-day mortality for veterans who are treated in community facilities versus VA is that the VA has come out better, and that's well documented in the piece that you just cited. So the quality metrics is that the VA just as consistently is good or better. And then if you look at costs, is that over half a dozen different conditions from cardiac conditions and surgeries to insomnia and many other medical conditions, is that when you do a head-to-head comparison, is that the cost in the community tends to be higher in part because there are more procedures and more appointments and more hospitalizations and so forth that are questionable in terms of whether they're needed. But since they are reimbursed, there's an incentive in the community to offer kind of more care that costs more.
And can I ask, when they are reimbursed, I'm not familiar because I'm fortunate enough that I don't need to, you know, go outside the VA healthcare system at all. But is there anything that that limits what an outside physician can charge for whatever it is? Or do they just submit their bill and there's no negotiation back and forth?
You know, the short answer for that, and Suzanne obviously pick up to augment, is that yes, there is definitely a cost that is already determined for a certain procedure. What there is not a limit on, though, is what it is that you bill for, how many times you bill. In other words, that kind of utilization review is not contained, even though an individual procedure has a known reimbursement attached to it, which is, I think, what your question was.
Yeah, it was. It's sort of like, you know, you go to the doctor and you have Blue Cross. Blue Cross will only pay the doctor X amount for whatever it is, that treatment. And I was wondering if the VA does the same thing.
Yeah, Suzanne, is there anything you want to add to that?
Can you hear me? Because
yeah, we can. You're a little bit low. But...
I think there's a couple issues here that Russell was trying to articulate. So let me give you an example. Although there are, you know, limits to the rates that these private sector providers are paid, which is, you know, essentially Medicare rates, there's no real utilization review as are in other systems of what they can recommend or what procedures they deliver. So for example, you know, veterans, the biggest form of cancer that veterans have is prostate cancer. The standard of care for what is called clinically insignificant prostate cancer, which is, you know, essentially prostate cancer that's not going to kill you. You're more likely to get hit by a bus or die of pneumonia than prostate cancer. The standard recommended treatment of care is what we call watchful waiting. That means you just monitor, you know, PSA levels and so forth. In the VA, studies have documented it's actually the only healthcare system in America that uses standard of care. And if you are Joe Smith and you have prostate cancer because of Agent Orange or whatever, you know, and you go to the VA and it's clinically insignificant, they will monitor it. If you go to the private sector through the Veterans Community Care Program, they are much more likely to give you invasive radiation treatment or even surgery. Now, and that's not because it's better for you, it's because it's better for their bottom line. That is actually unethical and really a patient safety violation, but that is standard in the private sector because it's more lucrative. Ditto if you go with a shoulder, knee, hip, you know, pain mm-hmm. issue, you're much more likely to get expensive surgery than you are at the VA, where you're more likely to get PT. And this is in part because there's no utilization review, and because the financial incentives in the private sector are profit-driven, not mission-driven, and the financial incentives in the VA are mission-driven, not profit-driven. There's absolutely no reason for a surgeon in the VA, you know, who is paid by salary, to recommend an unnecessary operation. It does not go, it does not enhance his income whatsoever. And I think veterans need to understand this, you know, because it's, it, you know, we have a tendency, I think, all of us, to think the grass is greener somewhere else. And it's not, and very often, and, you know, while they're not every private sector provider does this, but there's just a financial incentive in the private sector to do more, you know, give you unnecessary treatments, unnecessary medication. Private sector cancer doctors mark up their chemotherapy drugs. They're allowed to. So it's they have a financial incentive to give you that extra round of futile chemotherapy because they make money not only from administering the drug, but from a markup for the drug.
Well, you know, that's kind of discouraging when you think about that. But as you were talking, I was saying, you know, at our particular VA, we have an agreement with the University of Michigan. You know, they come and they handle a lot of the specialties. And I know many VA hospitals work that way. So we don't get experimented on. I don't think. I never felt that way. The one thing about the VA healthcare system that I found is that it is so specific to the veteran community. You know, they know our tendencies. They know that many of us have very similar issues, whether they're results of injuries, you know, during combat, or if they're post-traumatic stress disorders and so on and so forth, that maybe the outside world doesn't treat quite as effectively. Does that make sense? Either one of you?
Yeah, I mean, Russell can speak to this in mental health very adequate. I mean, effectively, I mean, if 100% of your patient population is veterans, then you're going to find out a lot about veterans in order to care for them. In the private sector under the VCCP or any other plan, veterans would represent something like 3% of the patient population of probably 1 to 5% of the patient population of an average, like, you know, primary care doctor specialist. So that means that oncologist or heart doctor or primary care doctor might have 5 veteran patients or maybe 100 veteran patients out of 2,100. And it doesn't make sense. They're very overburdened the way they are. And it just doesn't make sense for them to dedicate the hour after hour after hour that someone like Russell, who worked in the VA taking care of veterans, dedicated. I mean, for 5 patients or 100 patients. I mean, I think Russell can talk really effectively about, you know, the mental health conditions that I think it's over 50% of veterans have, and there's absolutely no requirement that, you know, non-VA mental health providers paid for by our tax dollars to take care of veterans. There's no requirement that they learn anything about, you know, veterans' mental health conditions, which, you know, Russell spent 37 years or 38 years learning how to deal with.
Well, that is true, because Russell, I didn't get a chance to mention that you worked for the San Francisco VA healthcare system as a chief psychologist. So I guess you know a little bit about treating mental health issues for veterans. I guess my question for the two of you to kind of wrap it up is that, you know, we really want to encourage our veterans to utilize the VA health system. Otherwise, they will find the powers that be will find ways of transforming it. Would you not agree to that?
It's a qualified yes, of course, because for almost any condition, the VA is going to be as good or better. And the ones that you mentioned a few minutes ago that are very veteran specific, the VA is unquestionably going to give you better care. It's going to be more evidence based. It's a requirement in the VA system that every single VA medical center and large CBOC have staff who have had very sophisticated training in things like what you were saying in terms of PTSD that just doesn't exist elsewhere. So for many conditions, it's easy to say that it is worth waiting if you want the best care. But that's not always what is the most important to somebody. They may not want the best care. They may not want to wait. I think the first part of your comment is in terms of if there's interest in saving the VA as a system, and we should be thinking about that because it is in jeopardy. There's a lot more than just going to get your care there. I mean, there's ways in which you can have your voices heard in many respects indicate that for you as an individual veteran that you already do rely on the VA, and you don't want to see developments that keep that are continuing really as we speak that could wind up with many inpatient and emergency room facilities defunded, and that care really transferred automatically to the community because that becomes policy.
Yeah, this is a subject that I think I would really like to have you folks back on to talk about more again in the future. And I know that, Russell, you have talked to my partner for a podcast coming up later on in the month. I'm not sure what your topic is, but because I think it's important. I don't see the VA actually eliminating 80,000 jobs. They probably could find some waste in there, but sometimes these people just throw out numbers just to scare us, I think. But I don't think they're going to get rid of that. Maybe I'm being very naive, but I think we've got to figure out how to support what is going on. Secretary Collins was in Michigan just last week and had rave reviews for all of the VA hospitals in Michigan and what we do, and you know that we've got to maintain the strength of our VA healthcare system. So I don't know what exactly is going on out there, but I really do want to thank both of you, Suzanne Gordon and Russell Lemley, for being on Veterans Radio today. And, keep up the good work. I mean, these are great articles, and you guys are answering questions that I think many of us have. You both write for the Veterans Healthcare Policy Institute. That's where there's some really great information on that website.
I'm very delighted that you go to it and can recommend it. So thank you, Dale.
Okay. Well, thank you both very much. Thank you, Susan. Thank you, Russell, for being on Veterans Radio.
Thank you. Bye.
Okay. Bye-bye. Bye. All right. Well, I know we didn't solve the world's problems there as far as the VA is concerned, but I wanted to get that information out to you just to start thinking about it a little bit. So we're going to bring in our benefits expert here for the last 15 minutes of the program. Carol Ann Falzone, retired Air Force Brigadier General. She also works with Legal Help for Veterans. I guess I got to throw that little disclaimer in there. But I find it interesting that we're talking about these issues. And I guess that's the thing, is we got to talk about these issues. We can't just let people run roughshod over everything.
No, I agree with you. And that was extremely interesting. And Dale, you know me, it was really hard for me to sit back and listen to this. So I have a few comments. Number one, I'm glad that the VA is looking at, and I think you're well aware of this, when the VA contracts, say with a company outside to get, whether it's a blood pressure done or another check or a colonoscopy or something done on the outside as an exam, to make it more efficient because they're so backed up in a community, okay? So they contract out for a procedure. But we've also been seeing our veterans have been calling us, which I'm very thankful for, and we do report it back. If they feel like the veteran got a poor exam, we are asking them to notify us because that's a contracted facility that the VA is paying them money. And so to the point to the previous guests, if the VA has this contract and now you're doing the test over and over three times to get a poor exam, that's a waste of money. So that isn't very efficient at all. So when you brought up the University of Michigan, who, you know, is with U of M, I'd love the contracting out for specialties that maybe the VA doesn't have the expertise. You know, when I go see a physician, I want to know if I'm having a procedure that that physician who's caring for me has done it 1,000 times versus you're exploring on me and you're doing it the second or third time. And I understand students and residents need to gain knowledge and experience, but then do it with the expert, you know, kind of do the teaching role. So there's several issues out there that I think it needs to be more efficient. But the main issue for me is to take care of our patients, our veterans, and to give quality care, to render quality care. And, you know, if you're having an emergency situation and where you live, I think the VA has done a great thing, and we've talked about it. If you think you're having a heart attack and your nearest VA is an hour down the road, then you need to go to the nearest facility to take care of you when you're having an emergency. So there's several issues we got to look at when we're going into the community. I like the community-based for the specialty services. I like it for when you've got a veteran who is rural and, you know, you can't get in as easily to the VA. So, you know, there's the pros and cons of this whole thing. And I hope we don't throw the baby with the bathwater. And we look at some of these issues and really see that we're delivering quality of care.
I think, well, I agree with you, Carol Ann, on that. I mean, it's not that I'm, you know, that I disagree with it. I think, you know, the mission of the VA is to take care of the veteran community, and I don't want that to get lost in all of this.
I totally agree with you.
All of this budget cutting and everything else that's out there. And as I said, you know, Secretary Collins was out. He was in Ann Arbor and Detroit, and I think Battle Creek or something, you know, just last week. And, you know, he was really touting what these facilities can do. And, you know, the cardiac stuff that's going out there, mental health, especially.
Yes.
And you know, and also that I agree with you that we both have known veterans who have been sent by the VA to an outside facility. To the Cleveland Clinic, to the Mayo Clinic, to the University of Michigan, to the University of Texas, wherever, you know, wherever they can get the superior care.
Right.
And that's, you know, and that is, I don't think that's going to go away.
No, and I hope it doesn't, because you know what, Dale, the real critical thing is the VA is the leader in all the research that's going on.
Absolutely.
And when they send it to, you know, MD Anderson in Texas, say for a certain cancer, or U of M, or another great facility, Cincinnati, a burn unit. We don't have a burn unit at the VA in Ann Arbor, but there's one at University of Michigan. There's one in Cincinnati, renowned. So if those services could be given to our veterans, I think that is wonderful, because in most of those teaching facilities, they are doing research hand in hand with the VA. And I think your guests brought up something that I'm really firm on, and that is consistency. I want to see the same physician. I want to be able to them to monitor my care, and then follow up if, you know, with my team at the VA, if I'm sent out. I think that communication is critical for a veteran's care.
I think that's important for anybody's care, you know, is that you have a dependable, you don't see a different person every time you go in to see your primary care.
Absolutely.
Doctor, because as much as we don't like to admit it, we feel much safer if it's the same person.
Yes.
You know, once we get that relationship going a little bit more, then when we go in and we not only do we tell them what our condition is, we can say, oh, how are you doing? And, you know, it kind of brings it more into that whole community, which I think is so important.
Well, you know, the one thing I saw earlier this week, Dale, I've seen the number 80,000 thrown out. Now, some have already left on taking the retirement, but I've also seen the beautiful list of all those exempt. And a lot of those are in the healthcare system, which I'm very thankful for. Your nurses, your doctors, your social workers, your chaplains, pivotal, essential positions. And then the article alluded to, it's not going to take this 80,000 from VHA, which is healthcare, 80,000 from VBA, which is benefits. And then they even brought up there is some trimming that has to go on, which I was surprised, in the other tower, which is the cemeteries in that area. Because I think that tower runs so unbelievably. But there might be some more efficiencies or waste that needs to be eliminated. That's what this article alluded to. They're looking at all three towers and seeing where there might be some reductions so that they could have better efficiencies. I really don't think that they want to destroy the VA health system. And so everybody isn't going to be referred out. You know, we've got too many great people in the VA system, in the hospital side, the healthcare side, that I don't think CBOCs are going to go away or outpatient clinics.
What did we do here in our local area? We just opened four or five CBOCs in the last 5-10 years. That would be a huge waste of energy and efficiency, money.
Absolutely. Think about the resources. I mean, the goal is to have a facility you could go to within, I believe, 25 miles. I mean, here in Michigan, they've just opened up Howell, Adrian, I think Chelsea. They've got one at Selfridge. They've just opened up the brand new one outside of Toledo, I think, in Findlay. Those are great services in this echelon system of healthcare.
Well, I wanted to touch back. I know we've only got a couple of minutes left, but just to touch back on what you were talking about, these outside contractors, I think that is something that does need to be looked at, because through both of our experiences, some of them were just terrible. And maybe, you know, if you get a... I'd rather go for quality than for cost. You know, if you buy the cheapest thing out there, sometimes it's not the best. And that's, who knows?
I mean, I don't know.
Yeah. And I don't know who decides who gets these contracts, but, it'd be nice if we could, know that we're getting the best of the best and at a good price. So,
That's what we tell our veterans. If you go for an exam and you feel like, and then we see the results. Mm-hmm. If it was not a good exam, the practitioner, the provider, maybe didn't answer your questions, you walk in and you take one blood pressure and you're out the door, and you've now driven an hour, that's not efficient. And then if we report that and you got to go again, it's like, wait a minute, that's a double cost and we didn't get the results, good results.
Yeah.
So that's where I wish they take a look at some of the contracted services.
Well, in our last couple of seconds here, is there anything that you've heard in the benefit side that we need to be aware of? Are there any new conditions or hoops that we need to jump through for anything?
Well, I would just tell you, I haven't seen anything new we've talked about, but I see the processes maybe trying to shore up that our claims and things do not bounce around like to a couple different ROs, which is regional offices, DROC, a decision review center, that only one area touches your file and let's make a decision and let's get this done quickly. I see too many times recently that if you can't make a decision, you send it up to the board. And it might sit up at the board for, a good lengthy period because they've got all these increases. So I just think there are some efficiencies on the VBA side that could make it a little better.
Well, as usual, we want to make sure that we encourage anybody, any veteran that's out there, not only to register at your local VA, wherever that happens to be, get into the system, because you can't do anything until you're in the system. And, if you do have any health conditions that you feel maybe are related to your time in the service, that you should contact an organization such as Legal Help for Veterans or your local VSO. I know walking in probably into every VA hospital in the country, as you go in the door, their VSOs are right there to answer any questions. And, if you have any questions for us, please contact us next. We do this program every month on the first Sunday of the month. And we would love to be able to answer your questions. So you can send me an email. That's dale@veteransradio.org. And we will bring up your story with our experts, with Carol Ann and David, who wasn't available today to talk about these things. This is why we're here, dedicating this time to helping you all out.
Well, Dale, the quickie is, the other person to contact, the county counselors out there, we've got 83 counties in Michigan, and there's county councils, whether they're called parishes or whatever in your state, but they're an awesome resource to go to. And yes, my colleague David wasn't on today, but he is a great help to reach out into the community. And the other thing is, a lot of veterans won't apply, but if your veteran dies and you're a spouse, I've been seeing a huge increase with DIC, the death indemnity. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes you don't even know what you're available for. So those widows out there, we've seen an increase in that lately. And that's sorry, because they still could have had that and their veteran could have had a disability rating, but chose never to apply for it.
Yeah,
so if you don't apply, you never know.
There are other benefits we haven't even talked about. Educational benefits for children and so forth. Section 35 or something like that, which is something. Yes. Maybe we could take a look at that next month, because I had a student in my own class this year, this last semester, whose father was in the military, and there are benefits to go to college, trade school, and all kinds of things. So. Well, let's put that all together. So coming up at we're coming up on the end of the hour today. I want to thank everybody for listening. Make sure that you know that we've got you are our stories, because every veteran out there has a story, And that's what our goal is to tell you as many stories as we can. So, you know, you can listen to Veterans Radio on our local broadcast stations, WAAM, WDTK, WKMET out in California. You can listen to us on podcasts. You can listen to us on Wreaths Across America Radio. So we're everywhere. We drop two podcasts a week on Mondays and Tuesdays. If you got a story you want to tell, let us know about that, because we want to tell the story. Just as they were talking about Bob Arvin, if we don't tell the stories, these people disappear. And so we want to make sure that we keep telling these stories, folks. That's up to you. So until next week, this is Dale Thornberry for all of us here at Veterans Radio, for Carol Ann Falzone. Until then, you are dismissed.
God bless America, land that I love. Stand beside her and guide her through the night with the light from above. From the mountains, through the prairies, to the oceans, white with foam. God bless America, my home sweet home. God bless America.